From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made with a knock on a door. Anna Maria Webster was injured from a bus accident and had been out of work for 2 years. She didn't have a way to pay her bills, and providing for her 5 children was a massive challenge. But when representatives from a local adult mentoring program arrived at her door on Concord Street, her life changed course. Webster shared her story with the Democrat and Chronicle. She described the bridge representatives as angels, saying, quote, "I told them, you came to me at a time when I needed you. Sometimes you don't know where to go or which way to go. When you can finally get up and go, it helps with your self-esteem," end quote. For 2 years, Webster met with her mentor, Hillary, to set goals. They discussed childcare, job prospects, transportation, and the resources available to her in the community. And that was back in 2017. Today, Webster has a full-time job at a local elementary school. Her story is reflective of the work that the Bridges of Success program has accomplished over the last 2 years in Rochester, part of the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. It's one of 2 adult mentoring pilot programs that have helped increase employment and household income for families living in poverty in Rochester. And here's how it works. Bridges representatives select neighborhoods in Rochester. They randomly knock on doors to ask residents if they want to join the program. If the residents agree, they're paired with mentors to help them set goals, share frustrations, make decisions related to housing, employment, transportation, and more. Catholic Family Center is the lead agency on the Bridges program. It says the data shows participants' average earned household income is up, and we're going to talk about what those numbers look like. Employment itself is up. We'll talk about that coming up. Representatives from RMAPI are celebrating the data. RMAPI was launched 5 years ago, and since then, it's received some criticism from time to time, and often it's about the time it's taken to achieve results. Well, project leaders say these adult mentoring programs are evidence of the efforts and the fact that it does take time, but there can be success here. This hour, we learn more about the Bridges to Success program and its impact. We'll hear from 2 people in an adult mentoring relationship as well. We're going to talk about all of this and more. First of all, welcome one of the participants in the Bridges to Success program, Francie Gonzalez, who I just had the pleasure of meeting.
Great to have you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Sean Futch, who is a Bridges to Success program director. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hello to Leslie Mossman, who's a mentor with the Bridges to Success program. Welcome, Leslie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Marlene Bissett is the CEO and president of Catholic Family Center. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Okay. So first of all, I want to make sure we just kind of outline what this program is, because when we talk about adult mentoring, when we talk about job training, all of these different efforts going on in the community, sometimes they feel really abstract, and we put money at them, and sometimes we get stats. We'll talk about the stats, but I want to kind of outline how this works, and I think Francie's story will be kind of illustrative of what's happening here. So I guess I'll start with Marlene, and we'll kind of go around the table. Mm-hmm. Why don't you give us a sense for what the mission is here with Bridges to Success?
The mission is really working with people who are interested in improving their employment and income status. So the ultimate goal is to help people move up and out of poverty through better job prospects, higher levels of income. And what we do is we do, as you said, partner people with a trusted mentor. And that relationship builds over time, and it's specifically set to address whatever the barriers are that are in the lives of that person who's trying to make changes in their life. So we could address just about anything, but at the base and heart of it is a trusted relationship with somebody who knows about the system and how to navigate the system of supports.
How do you find mentors?
Sean, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, Sean, you're up.
Okay. So our mentors are from our community. They're people, they're neighbors to our participants. They live here. They know, in some cases, what the struggle is and what it has been, and they've been able to make it through on their own themselves. And so those are the perfect people, because they can actually say, "I know what you're going through. Mm-hmm. I've been there. Let me show you how I got out."
How hard is it to find people to do that?
It's not hard. People want to help. If you've gone through something and you've made it through with the help of someone else, or just with knowing how to do it, you want to help. You want to give back. And I find that in Rochester, people do want to give back.
Well, and we'll talk as we go throughout the hour, if people want to offer their help. I mean, mm-hmm. I suspect there are ways they can do that.
Absolutely.
Always looking for help there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can take on volunteers. We can take on folks who just want to come in and tell their story and maybe talk about what they did to accomplish or to get out of the situations that they've been in.
Leslie.
Yes.
Tell me about your path to getting involved here.
Okay. I started with Bridges to Success almost 2 years ago in March. And I saw the announcement, the job announcement, and I'm like, I do this with my family. At that time, I had my niece that was living with me from Puerto Rico because of the Hurricane Maria, and that's exactly what I was doing with her. And I said, if I do it with her, I can do it with others. So I inquired about the position, and here I am today.
We're going to talk, I think, about how that experience has gone for you, but can you sum it up? Has it been rewarding? How has it been?
Yes, it is rewarding to be able to see where our participants coming into the program and then where they go and the things that they tell us, their testimony that they tell us back. We celebrate their achievements by having a graduation after the two-year period, and we give them the opportunity to tell us what they've, you know, what they've learned, how Bridges have been a support to them, and just listening to that is rewarding enough.
160 total participants so far. Is that the number I've seen, by the way? Is that
yes,
about right?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know how many participants, I mean, if you had full capacity, if you were doing everything that you could possibly do, do we have any idea how many we would end up with?
Out of the 160?
No, I mean beyond. You got 160 participants now. How many could you have?
Well, oh, wow.
I mean, we are funded for the 160 right now. We are now recruiting the next cohort, which is 75 more participants. So okay. Right now, we have the funding to enable 75 more participants.
Okay, and your timeline there?
We're starting to recruit right now. So as soon as we fill up the 75, then the program will be filled for the next cohort.
Okay. Let's get back to the numbers in a second, but let's understand the human impact here. So, Francie, you've been, I said, where'd you grow up? She said Rochester, New York. But you said you moved here at three, but it's really.
Yes, but it's Rochester.
You consider yourself lifelong Rochester.
Rochester, yes.
And why don't you tell me a little bit about your life leading up to getting involved in this program?
Oof. So, just to sum it up, because, I mean, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, so it's going to be so long, but no.
So, it's okay. We got time.
Well, I mean, I came when I was three. My mother, she was in a very abusive relationship, so, in Puerto Rico, so what she wanted to do was get up and go. So, she took me, my oldest sister, and my brother at the time, and she came here. She had family here, so it was her best way to start. And, you know, from what she knew, it was like rent was affordable. There was a couple of things that can help her. You know, DSS, we didn't have that in Puerto Rico. It was a lot, you know, things where I originally came from Joren Torres, which was a very tough neighborhood out there. And so we came here, and my mom just put us to go to school and do what we had to do. And I used to love the teachers. So I always grew up with, like, going into Galisano Hospital, getting hospitalized and stuff. And so I got to meet a lot of different people from different programs, and I was blessed. So then when I grew up, I went to John Marshall. I dropped out. You know, I was out here. I was in the streets. I was doing whatever I was doing. You know, I'm not trying to listen. I'm trying to be in the streets. I'm not trying to be in school. I'm not, you know, I'm wasting my time. What am I going to do? You know, but I decided once I had my kids that I grew up, I was like, I want to go back to school. You know, I have to be this role model for my kids. So how can I be hypocritical and not go to school, not have my GED? Because that's one thing that I'm not going to have for my kids. You're not going to come and tell me, oh, I'm just going to be in the streets. I'm not going to get my high
school
equivalency.
That's not going to fly with you?
Yeah, no, not. Duh.
And can I just back up just a little bit? Did you make that decision when you were a teenager? Did you not sort of see a future for yourself? I mean, what was kind of drive when you're dropping out? What's driving your mindset there?
I didn't have support. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing in our community. A lot of people feel that they don't have support. They don't have someone to talk to. If they feel that, oh, I'm going to go to a family member, sometimes they don't feel that they can. You know, they can't express themselves. They can't just go and willingly be like, hey, this is what I want to do, and have that, yeah, come on, let's go. Let's get it. Let's get it together. We're going to work through it together. You know, it's not just a you thing. It's a we thing. You know, they don't have that. So I didn't have that. And like I said, the most that I had were nurses and stuff growing up. I was always hospitalized. So that's the most I had, was the support of the Golisano Hospital and Strong, you know. So that, to me, was my support.
You feel support sort of on the street?
Yeah.
Yeah?
To be honest, yeah. My supposedly friends, you know, different people who were going through the same thing, who were, you know, able to relate to what I was going through, who as well didn't feel like, oh, what am I learning in school? You know, like, is this really going to help me? Like, is this really going to get me up and go? Like, you're teaching me stuff that I'm not even going to use at the grocery store. Like, I mean, I'm just not going to divide this and do that. That's too much. I ain't going to do it. You know, so that's exactly where it comes into. Like, why am I in school? Why am I sitting here? What are you teaching me that's going to help me out there? You know, I have to learn how to survive. You're not going to tell me I gotta read these books. It's not gonna help me in the streets. There's a lot of bullying. There's a lot of different stuff. It's just so much that comes together.
Yeah, and so it sounds to me like when you're going through, again, those teenage years, if school doesn't feel relevant to what it takes for you to make it, to survive, then you might not choose it. And I mean, mm-hmm. the general you, not just you specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If kids don't feel like school is presenting something that's relevant to their mm-hmm. future, this is a whole separate conversation, but I mean, that makes me wonder how we can change how kids are feeling in terms of what's relevant in school.
Actually, I feel like it all loops around if you really think about it, because when I actually got into building bridges, so after I dropped out and had my kids and everything, you know, I passed by Hart Street. I seen the, just like I was telling her, I seen the nice little drawings, and I'm like, you know what? What's in there? I want to check. And when I went and I checked, it was ABC, and, you know, I was able to go and get into the Hart Street to get my GED, and I was able to check on my kids, because nowadays, you know, you can't trust childcare, or you can't trust a lot of places, you know, with a lot of malicious things going on. You know, you don't want to just leave your kids with anybody. No, I'm popping up. I'm about to check my kids. I'm about to make sure they're good. And I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to do what I need to do to get myself better. And then in one of the events that they had Building Bridges. And then Hillary was like...
So this
like,
is about a couple of years ago now?
This was, yeah, like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago. And Hillary was there. She's like, hey, would you like to try and, you know, apply for our program and whatever? I'm like, I got nothing better to do. Why not? You know, I'm going to school. It's better. If it's going to help me, why not? So she sat down, explained the situation to me. And one thing people don't really talk about, so these mentors pay you to achieve your goal. So every time you have a goal and you set a goal, you get $50. Who gonna pay you to get your own goals? Like, who's gonna do that? I mean, you paying me to do what I want to do. Like, really? But would you take it? I would take $50.
That worked for you.
At first it did. Because I'm like, oh, well, I need the money. I need diapers. You know, I could budget this. I could do that. And from there, it just went on to, oh, I just did this. Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. I just got that. Like, hold on. Oh, I'm gonna set a business plan. I'm going to do this. And it just opens your mind so a lot. Because like she said, you're put with a mentor, somebody mm-hmm. who knows the city, somebody who knows where you can get all these funds, all these grants. Oh, my lights went off. Oh, well, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Give me this. Give me that. I just need these papers. We're going to take it, and we're going to help you get a budget. They're going to pay that. You know, they help you find your way around when there's certain things that you really need.
Have your lights gone off before?
Yes. I mean, come on. I mean, the winter, and it hit, you know. I mean, it get cold. You can't do it. I'm skinny. I pack no heat. Yes, you know. But, yeah, like I said, I had a great mentor. I was lucky. And the thing is, you don't just get one mentor. You get a mentor, you know everybody.
Well, and you know, so Francie's reaction, which we're laughing because she's very demonstrative, and I'm appreciating the conversation. But, you know, Francie's reaction is indicative to me of, if I ask, have your lights gone off, your reaction says to me, when people are living in poverty or really struggling, that happens all the time.
Yes.
And the reason I ask that is I'm wondering when that happens. Before this whole process, what do you do with that? What do you do about that?
you stress. What you mean? You be like, oh my God, my license off. I got my kids. What am I going to do? But when you have a mentor mm-hmm. that you could easily, I mean, you get their cell phone numbers. Like, listen, I have this going on. I don't know what to do. They're going to be on point. They're going to tell you, call this number or call that number, or, you know, they'll lead you in the right way. They know. They're ready. They're prepared for this. Like, it's not no, you're alone. No, we're in this together. Like, it's not no, oh, your lights went off. I'm telling you, my mentor, I was so blessed with her because if I was going through something, she was going through it with me. Oh, my kids don't got no clothes. Francie, I just went and got some clothes from wherever she went and got them from and brought them to me. Oh, I can't get to you. I have an appointment with you. I'm sorry. I can't make it. It's okay. I can get to you. You know what I'm saying? That's that support. You need that support because not a lot of people have that, yeah. and that's the problem. Yeah. But I'm telling you, with them, you good. You lit.
So 2 years ago, before you're in this program, even when you're thinking, you know, you want to get your GED, what did you envision for yourself as a possibility for work?
Okay, so originally, like I said, I was getting hospitalized a lot through the Golisano program, and so I was in an EDO program for eating disorders, but then we were kids, so it's an adolescent center, and through there, I was able to be with a lot of cancer patients, a lot of patients with, you know, heart issues and stuff, and a lot of different kids, just a lot of different kids, and it really touched me how Golisano really helped out all of us. Just all of us completely. And I was like, you know, when I grow up, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a nonprofit organization and I'm going to go and I'm going to make sure that these kids have clothes, food, shelter, whatever they don't have, because there's a lot of kids out here that are neglected who don't have support. And exactly that, they go into the streets because that's what they think. Oh, I have no support. I'm just going to go get my money however I'm going to get it. There's a million ways to get your money. You don't have to do it in the streets, honey. You don't. There's just a whole bunch of ways you can do it. Just look for your resources. Like, look, that's, you have 24 hours in a day. You mean to tell me you're not going to spend your time wisely to go and get the help that you need to progress in life and not to be out in the streets? I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. Like, that's just, that's my vision, and I'm working towards that.
So that's still your vision now?
Yes,
that's
it
what
is.
You want to do?
Yes.
Now, on the way to that ambitious goal, are you working elsewhere? What's the plan?
Well, I just got my DBA. It's called Francie's Beauty Supply. So I'm working on my own line of products. I want everything natural. So everything like hair growth. And I'm not separating nothing. It's not, oh, just for women or nothing. No, it's women, men, all of that. Like, I'm working on that right now. And I'm doing studio time, learning how to do my own stuff. So with Just Us Entertainment, it's me and my boyfriend, we're working on it. And then in July, I'll be going into ROC for the cosmetology program. So that's exactly where I'm going to start my classes to get my license, get my business. And through my business, mm-hmm. I'm going to fund a certain amount of percentage to go into the nonprofit. You know, so I'm working on it. I'm working.
You sound like you've got a real sort of solid mindset on that. Is your boyfriend listening right now, by the way?
I don't know, but if he is, he heard me, boo-boo.
He's a good one, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, so I'm also curious to know now, Francie, that you've had this chance to work with a mentor. And as you say, if something's wrong, to text somebody or to call, mm-hmm. knowing that they're going to be able to direct you. I mean, I certainly see the value there. And to me, you sound like someone who, again, that switch has been flipped and you're going, mm-hmm. well, I'm going to do what it takes. Mm-hmm. But when you don't have a mentor, I mean, for all the people who have been in the sort of the position that you've been in, but who don't have mentors, it's got to be really hard when the lights are out or you don't know how mm-hmm. you're going to pay rent or whatever the case is, and you don't even know where to go. Mm-hmm. That seems to me like it would be just about the hardest thing, because it's not like there's, until you got a mentor, one sort of a one-stop shop that will tell you everything
right.
you need. Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, a lot of people... they try not to go to, like, Department of Human Services because they're like, oh, we're not going to get help, especially if you go to St. Paul. It's
people don't want to go to DHS?
No, because it doesn't always guarantee you're going to get that help. It doesn't. A Catholic Family Center, on the other hand, they have their own fundings for that. I mean, there's certain things you got to go through. You know, you got to bring some paperwork or whatever, but they try to do it as fast as they can. Like I said, there's just a lot of resources out there that help. Catholic Family Center has been one of the main ones, you know, as well, to help, as along with Action for a Better Community, mm-hmm. the Community Place, all these places. I mean, it's so much. It's so much help out here. We just got to learn where to look and where to find it.
Well, Marlene Bissett, I mean, one of the things that the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative has aimed to do from the start is at least, if nothing else, consolidate a little bit more and give people a better chance to find what they need more quickly, as opposed to, you know, because when I'm listening to Francie, I'm going, they don't want to go to, you know, people may not want to go to DHS. Francie and, you know, sort of her friends who are in the same spot, they might not want to go to DHS because if they feel like they're going to go there for hours and not get what they need, they're not going to go back. That's a big problem. Is it getting better sort of consolidating what people need?
That is what we found 4 or 5 years ago when the Rochester Monroe Poverty Initiative started. Across every organization we talked to, one of the key barriers was people not being able to navigate the system. So that has been the impetus for the mentoring program and for the other integration work that we're doing across organizations. So this initiative is one example of 3 or 4 organizations working together to try to help fix that problem that we have in this community. But it is a very common barrier and complaint that we hear from almost everybody that we work with, that they don't know where to go or how to get there. And yet we do have many, many resources in our community. As Francie said, they're out there. Yeah. People don't know how to find them.
So Francie, now your kids are how old?
Oh, I got 3 babies. I got 5, 6, and I got a 15-month-old.
How they doing?
They're good. They're hyper. They're great. They're kids.
It's amazing ages, aren't they?
Yes,
Well, it doesn't last forever.
Well, thank God for you guys, though, because Wildcrats be keeping them busy, so I'm okay.
As good as the last 2 years have been for you, what's the hardest part of day-to-day and week-to-week life right now?
Trying not to slack on anything. So sometimes we get where we want to do something and then we're just like, I'll sit down today. Or, I'm not going to do it. Nah, it's not an option. You got to get up. You got to do it. Because the minute that you get too comfortable with not doing something, you're going to stay in that position. But no, you got to, even after the 2 years are up with Building Bridges, like we set up a day-to-day thing. We set up this is what we're going to do. These are our goals. This is our lifestyle. You know, they're trying to help you change your lifestyle so that you can better yourself. And if you keep doing that, getting motivational things and doing what you need to do, you're going to strive. You're not going to go any lower. You're going to strive.
I can see why they wanted to elevate your voice for this conversation. I mean, you're a remarkable woman. And
thank you.
I know, you know, they're proud of the success stories, but they also know the challenges, and I am curious to know if you feel like the people who lead our communities in government, so whether it's local government, and I'm not talking about any one political leader, right, but I'm talking about every layer of government that you can think of, from the White House to the mayor's offices to everybody else, do you feel like people in leadership understand what it's like to live in poverty?
No. Not unless they've been there. Trump definitely doesn't. I mean, I don't take it back. Like I said, Trump definitely doesn't. I mean, everybody to each his own. You know, like I said, I'm from Rochester. We're going to do it. We're going to keep it a buck with you. That's where I'm coming from. No, not unless if they haven't been through it, if they haven't talked about how they've experienced it, I don't feel that they understand what poverty is. I don't feel like they understand, like, oh, we ain't had nothing to eat. Oh, we gonna fry some flour and dip that into a little bit of the sauce of the beans, and that's what we gonna have for dinner or the whole day. That's gonna last the whole. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different things. It's different situations. I mean, has Trump lived in a house of roaches? I don't think so. Like, it's just a lot of stuff that comes with poverty that people don't talk about, or, you know, it's a lot of reasons why a lot of people are out here in these streets, because they don't feel they got that support, you know. But, like, I feel like I was blessed to be a part of Building Bridges because I got that support. I mean, I'm talking about a house full of people supporting me. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was great.
Well, remind us again how you heard about it the first time.
Action, ABC.
ABC.
So at Hart Street, yes.
That's great. Yeah, I'm listening to this story. It's really moving. Sean, what do you make of this story? And if you think Francie's story is representative of what Bridges to Success is all about?
I love Francie. And yes, her story is very much a representative of what Bridges is about. I think she speaks well for most of the participants who've been in the program and who have graduated, and those who are coming into the next round for cohort 2.
So Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we're going to sort of dig in now to the actual work of mentoring and what that, you know, what that is all about. Because when Francie talks about what that meant, knowing that support was going to be there, knowing that someone might be there with an answer if she didn't have it herself, either for herself or for her kids, that's major stuff. That's really, really important. We're going to talk about what that work entails, how it's come together, and again, what you ought to know going forward. I also want to know a little bit more about some of the numbers just to make sure we do understand how we're tracking whether it's working. We're talking about Bridges to Success as an adult mentoring program. The amazing Francie Gonzalez is with us, who's a participant. Leslie Mossman's a mentor. Sean Futch is the program director. Marlene Bissett, CEO and president of Catholic Family Center. And we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Blues for Mr. Charlie debuted in 1964, the second play from the great James Baldwin. It's the story of a white man who shoots a black man dead, knowing that he'll never be convicted for the crime. And it's a story about some timeless and sad issues in this country. It's coming back to the stage in Rochester this weekend. We talk about the themes of Blues from Mr. Charlie next hour. Welcome back to Connections. It's a short break, and it's really one of the shortest breaks you're going to hear in broadcasting anywhere, because we spend 52 minutes out of the hour on Connections. Nobody really is doing that anywhere besides public radio. And the reason we can do that is because we have the support of the community. And we've been making a point on this, which is the last day of our winter membership campaign, which is that we know we've got a broad sort of cross-section of membership in this community. And we also know there's a lot of people in this community who need public radio, who need careful, thoughtful journalism, and who need platforms that will elevate voices no matter your income, no matter your status in a community. Everyone should be at the microphone and everyone should be at the table. And I think this hour is a good representation of what we try to do on Connections. But we can't do it without community support. And if you think about the people who need that, but maybe right now, just based on the circumstance of their life, can't call and make a pledge of support, if you can, do it for the community. Do it because our entire community works together on this. This is our last day of the campaign. If we make the goal, we make it. And if we don't, we don't. And we're asking you to call 454-6300. It's 454-6300. Or you can email the program. Not email. I'm back in sort of listenership mode. It's 454-6300. You can jump online. It's easy. WXXINews.org. Honestly, in raw dollars, any contribution matters to us. And this program this hour is a really good representation of what we're trying to do and why. So thank you for supporting public radio, and thanks for being a member, and thanks for listening to Connections. Okay, so let's talk about how we know this is working. And I think, Marlene, Sean, can you give me a sense when we see some of the numbers? I mean, I was looking at the Democrat and Chronicle. I'll just read these numbers again here. The data for this program, the Bridges program, finds participants' average earned household income increased 118%?
That is correct.
Okay, and average employment increased 110%?
Yes.
Okay. We're pretty confident those numbers are accurate?
Oh, the numbers are accurate. Yes. And we'll continue to monitor and measure those. We have two different ways that we're tracking the information. One is what we call the program data, where we get self-reported information from all of the participants, like Francie, and we track where they were and where they've gone to. And then we're actually working in partnership with the University of Notre Dame's Lab for Economic Opportunity as the professional evaluators, who are then making contact with the participants and pulling in information and data so that we could be able to not only confirm the information that we're getting from all of our participants, but primarily so that we could compare what's happening with our participants to a control group. Early on, we decided to construct this program as a randomized control trial so that we would be able, at the end of the program, to look at the results and say, can we statistically attribute these results to the interventions of the mentor, as opposed to other changes that might be happening in the community, like increases in the or decreases in the unemployment rate? And that's what we've been able to find through the work with the University of Notre Dame.
Let me also just sort of probe a little bit about income and employment, mm-hmm. because, and I don't, you know, this is not meant to sort of be crass or anything else, but if you have a group of people, if there's 100 people in a cohort, mm-hmm. and coming into the program, one person was employed out of the 100, just a thought experiment. And then after the program, two people were employed. You could say we've doubled the employment, but there's still 98% of people not working. What I don't know is, you know, generally speaking, how many people who come through the program are actually working, as opposed to not just where they were before, but how many people are working, and are they working and you know, are they finding a pretty sustainable wage?
And just in terms of the math, we're including all the people in the program in the denominator. So if we had one working and then two working, it wouldn't be 100% increase because we're going against the total number of people in the program. I, off the top of my head, Sean, I actually don't have the numbers. I think about 40% of the folks in the program
were employed,
yes.
And possibly a little more than that. Mm-hmm. The other thing you have to think about is that maybe 40, 50 of them came in with employment, but while they were in the program, we were able to help them increase their hourly wage or, you know, move up the scale. So it may not have been that they weren't employed and now all these people got employed, but they were employed and they got better employment, or maybe they wanted another part-time job on top of the part-time job they came in with, and it became full-time employment. So there's a lot of different scenarios that happened in that process to get us to that point.
So just to sort of kind of add a little bit of sort of the different scenarios, mm-hmm. looking at the data that we have in major areas like housing, health, education, employment, 80% of adult mentoring program participants advanced from what is defined as crisis or at risk to stable in at least one area of social support. So that includes, as we said, housing stability, physical health, mental health, family stability, peer support, education, employment. Employment increased from roughly from 40 to 84 participants of those still active or graduated.
Correct.
That's right there, Sean. Mm-hmm. The average earned household income increased from an average of $447 a month to $975
correct
per month. Okay. That's, yeah. I'm trying to sort of look just sort of objectively at those numbers. That's significant. What is the goal? Is there a goal?
Whatever self-sufficiency means to you.
I guess the goal is self-sufficiency.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. Francie, is there a goal in terms of you? Do you set income goals? Is it self-sufficiency? I mean, how do you define what you're trying to do right now?
I would say self-sufficiency right now, mainly because I would say self-sufficiency only because I'm trying to like just get everything going, have everything planned so that eventually I can be able to help the community. I want to do what they did for me, you know, because that there's that help, you know, and just like she said, there's a lot of people in the community who are willing to help and want to help, but how can they help if they don't know where to start?
Sure.
You know?
And I think for the people rooting for you to make that dream happen, they're also rooting for you to get paid.
I mean, yeah, I'll get paid eventually. As long as I'm making a move, I'm making a difference, I don't care. I mean, I'm going to get my own stuff, you know, my own business. And out of that business, I'm going to help others. So that's, I'm looking at the bigger picture. I'm looking at the stretch, the reach. I'm looking at that, you know.
Before I grab a phone call, and then we're going to talk to Leslie about mentoring. You know, you mentioned growing up and choosing in teenage years, as some kids do, to drop out of school, mm-hmm. to feel that there's more support on the street than there would be in the other structures of society. Mm-hmm. You had to learn that there's a lot of different ways that you can make money, that it's not just on the street. Mm-hmm. There's different options. Was it simply someone supporting you and helping you see that? And how do you think kids who are going to end up in positions like the one you were in when you were in your teenage years, how can we sort of convince more kids of that there are other options?
No, I didn't have somebody who helped me mm-hmm. Kind of view that other than my kids. Just the fact that I didn't want my kids to grow up like what I was at that point in time. You know, I was like, I'm going to do better so that my kids can look up to me and do better themselves. And then after that, like I said, I had my mentor, Hillary,
sure.
and then everybody else. And so, yeah, I feel like if we can reach out, if there can be a lot more people willing to help the youth, that willing to help these kids get into the right path, you know, then yeah, they got that support, because that's all they need is the support. If you don't have the support, if you don't have the ways to get around and do what you need to do and have positive vibes, what are you setting yourself up for? You're not going to strive. You're not going to do anything but have negative people around you who do negative things. You need to cut that loss and let it go and just change your circle. Like, I don't care if it's just two friends you have, and those two friends are making moves, you're going to make moves too, because mm-hmm. they're going to push you to do that, you know? And I think that's the best thing we can do, just try to help each other out.
Sarah from Compeer in Rochester is on the phone and wants to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
We're Compeer's good friends with Catholic Family Center. Mm-hmm. I started tuning in, and it's been a pleasure to listen to your story, Francie.
Thank you. I just
wanted to speak to that relationship component that you have stressed as such an important part of the program that you're participating in. And I think at Compeer, we see the same thing as those initial grabs for, you know, if you get a little monetary incentive to participate is one mm-hmm. thing, but what keeps you going is that relationship with another human being. Mm-hmm. And something that, you know, we strive to do at Compeer is engage the community on that level. So we talk about getting participants in the program, and we seem to have no problem getting participants in the program, but trying to get the whole community to rally around mentoring and realize what individuals can do to, mm-hmm. to contribute to that. So I really just want to thank you for sharing, and hopefully the other listeners are saying, hey, you know, maybe I can get in on this. No, you don't have to, doesn't have to be a monetary contribution, but just a little bit of hand holding just to get through some of those tougher parts of life. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's anything that you would say to the listeners about how that, you know, more about that impact of another human. I mean, I think you've kind of covered it, but I know just from our standpoint, we're always looking to try to get that buy-in from the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sarah, thanks. Go ahead, Francie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate everything she just said. I mean, I think that's exactly it. Like, we need people to do this. So thank you for having us up here. Thank you for, you know, getting the word out so that people can know that, you know, there are people here, because I have a lot of friends that come and they'll ask me for advice and, oh, Francie, this is going on and you better not come over here with that. No, this is what we're going to do. This is a plan. We're going to sit down. We're going to set a plan. And these are our goals. We're going to do it. You know, this is, you know, and you need that support. You need that support. I mean, if you don't have it, you feel like you don't have the energy. You don't want to go. But I mean, once you have it, you're going all in. You're going hard for it, and you're going to get what you want to get. Like,
well, Sarah, thanks for the phone call. Nice to hear from you, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Sarah calling from Compeer in Rochester. And so let's talk mentoring. First of all, you want to do it. How can people do it?
Just give us a call, 325-5116, and we will get you started.
You better do that number one more time and a little more slowly.
325-5116, and my extension is 3418. So if you're interested in mentoring, and assisting with all that we do with volunteering, give me a call.
Are you in particular looking for people who've sort of been there and seen that?
Yes, absolutely. They're going to be more open to what's going on and more apt to want to help. And also the mentees will be more open to wanting to hear what they have to say.
Sure.
You know, they want to know that you're someone who's been where I'm standing.
Gotcha. Well, Leslie Mossman is a mentor with the Bridges to Success program. So let's talk about the work that you've been doing now. So you went into this program. First of all, why don't you tell me a little bit more about you first before we jump into the mentoring part?
Okay. My background, I have a minor in social work and a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, but all my life I've worked in social work. So I have done different things. I worked in education, and I actually was working at the Brockport College with the migrant education program before I came to Bridges. And I really enjoy working in the Bridges to Success because I do see the difference that the participants are doing, and I can see how the mentoring program is providing what they need. And it's mainly assisting them navigate the resources that are already in the community so that they can accomplish the goals that they have set for themselves.
How many people have you worked with as a mentor?
I have, in my caseload, I have 18.
Mm-hmm. And when you hear Francie talk about the impact of feeling the support, knowing someone's going to be there in sort of a pinch, or can at least help guide you or help direct you? What do you spend most of your time doing as a mentor? How does that sort of kind of break, how does your time break down as a mentor?
Okay, so when we meet with our participants, we sit down and we set out the different goals and the steps to complete those goals. And my job is to provide the participants the tools that they need to be able to complete the steps to get to the goal. So a typical day will be interacting with a participant or getting information from resources that my participant might need so that when I'm meeting with my participant, I can have that information ready for them.
What do you most commonly hear that they need?
One of the biggest issue is housing. There is a lack of housing in Rochester. Being the rent is too much, or it's just giving the participants the opportunity to live in an apartment because they don't have a good history on renting. But housing is one of the biggest issues.
How able do you feel you are to help kind of steer them in directions that they need then? Is it simply knowing what's available? Is it, if housing is a need, mm-hmm. are there solutions?
Well, it is not difficult, but we do find the resources in the community because we work with other agencies that provide housing, and so it's a matter of navigating those systems in order for them to get to that goal.
And now, when we think about the need going forward, you know, Leslie, I'm thinking about a city where the rates of poverty are very, very high. Mm-hmm. The rates of child poverty, extreme poverty, are very, very high. This is a program that's now helped, again, 160 is the number. Right. Next cohort's
75.
I mean, I'm of two minds here. I mean, I've got notes like this. I just got a note from David listening in Vancouver, Canada, on the WXXI mobile app, who wanted to just send a note and say, not only are the stats very impressive, this sounds like real help for real people, and I am impressed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
These are programs that would be needed in Rochester and in Vancouver and in Los Angeles mm-hmm. and in everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But is it, Marlene, can we get it at a scale that we need it to be? I mean, we have a lot more need than just 75 or 160 people.
Actually, we structured this program with all the data analytics and the work with the randomized control trial because our ultimate goal is to be able to prove a positive return on investment. Because the only way to scale a program is to be able to go back to our governmental leaders and to public and private funders and say, for every dollar you invest, we're going to be able to give you $5 back in the long term. Now, those are made up numbers at the moment. But the expansion to 74 more or 75 more people in the second cohort is so that we could increase the integrity of our data analytics and then be able to go back after this next cohort to our leaders in the government and discuss a positive return on investment that then would enable us to scale the program.
So in other words, you feel you're working on it?
We're working on it. We're working on it.
Is that the way to sum it up?
Yeah, and I think the positive results we have so far are really motivational for all of us to mm-hmm. keep moving, but we're working on the positive return on investment in total.
Okay. Is that a fair question, by the way?
It is a fair question.
I mean, because these stories, I mean, you can't, the story of Francie Gonzalez can't be sort of made up or turned into a stat. I mean, it's mm-hmm. working or it's not.
Right.
And that's why when we're getting notes like David saying, this sounds like real success for real people, which I think is sort of just David's way of saying, sometimes we talk about poverty too abstractly. Mm-hmm. So that's right. why this matters, but I'm just thinking about all the other people like Francie who need that mentor, maybe don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. Francie, is there a story of like, the first thing that comes to mind in the last 2 years from a mentor, that a phone call you had to place, something that went wrong? I mean, is there something that stands out to you that went, my God, thank God that
I had her?
Yeah, that mentor was there.
I would say, like she said, housing. I was looking to move and I was struggling. I mean, you can't find a deposit everywhere. You need a deposit wherever you go. You need a deposit, first month's rent. Who's going to come up with $1,000? Not I. So, you know, so having that program there to help you, you know, and to help you find your resources, to help you get your deposit, or maybe you don't have furniture. You lost your furniture, or now you need furniture. Now you need this or food or whatever. It's all there. It's all there. So having her there and like, listen, Hillary, you know, like, I need to move. This is my goal. I want to move. I don't want to be here, and I want something better for my kids, and so I can feel at ease. I was going through depression, so you know, all of that. And having her there and being there literally the whole way was so good. It was like a relief, a stress relief. Like, it was just, it was great. It was terrific. Like, she was just there the whole way through, and I'm very grateful.
Has housing worked out better for you then?
Yes. I've been able to stay stable. I used to go from house to house, and, you know, and since I've been able to just be stable. And I'm actually, I live out in Gates now. So I used to live in Hudson, but I'm out in Gates in the meantime. I still go around to the city because I love the city. I can't help it. Can't get enough. You know, in positive vibes, like I said, none negative, just positive. And, yeah, just trying to help out other people, give back what they gave to me, like, That's all I got to do.
Can you describe for listeners who haven't been in that situation what it's like when you're moving from place to place, when you're, you know, for various reasons? I don't know if it's because you can't make rent or the conditions aren't what you need. Can you briefly describe what that's like?
It's stressful. It is so stressful, especially if you got to move in the winter. You don't want to. Your fingers is frozen. You're like, man, you know what? Don't even pack that. Just throw it out. We'll get a new one if we can. You know, it's very stressful. It's just having to find everything. You know, you got to set up the RG&E. Sometimes if there's no RG&E there, you have to go and you got to make an appointment so that they can set it up by whatever day. You got to be able to be at the old house. You know, it's just so much that goes into that, you know, having to find something to rent, to move things. If you don't have that support, Building Bridges will find a way to get you that support. Let me tell you, because I'm telling you, my mentor was on point. Like, oh, I need a washer. Oh, okay, don't worry about it. Oh, Francie, I found a free washer. All you got to do is find a way to get it. If you don't have a way to get it, I have somebody that can get a truck that can help you get it. Like, it's literally that much support into it. It was, I can't stress enough how much this program has really helped me out.
Wow. And Leslie, you mentioned housing as number one. What would be number two on the list of kind of concerns that you often hear? Is there a number two? Because housing is very high on the list, I know.
I think when I... The pillars on the program, I think that each of those are very important for our participants, and that's the housing, mental health and physical health, finance, and employment. And I think that housing and employment, they're hand in hand. They're like right there together. It's the two biggest issues.
Real briefly, before we close the hour, Patrick emails the program to ask, do your guests work with any of the local colleges for adult mentoring and educational opportunities?
I work with some of the colleges in terms of internships, them coming into the program and learning from our wonderful mentors.
Okay.
As well as we go there to recruit for folks to the 75 that we're looking for.
The places like REOC, yes, who have training programs, yeah, are also targets for our referrals.
MCC has been a target.
When we talk to people about where they could go to get their training, MCC, REOC have been two of the primary ones.
Yes.
Okay. Another listener just emailed to say, I'm a professional educator looking to retire soon, and mentoring folks to find success and enrichment is a project that I would like to pursue in my retirement. Would Bridges to Success have a place for an older white male in the mentor program?
Absolutely. We also have a high school equivalency program. And as Francie has said, she was working on her high school equivalency when she came into our program. So some of our mentees need someone who would tutor them to pass the task exam. So absolutely, we would be able to use
them. And real briefly, Kate, in our last 90 seconds, says, how is this program different from the Nurse Family Partnership that works with first-time mothers in poverty?
Nurse Family Partnership, I know, has personal relationships out with the families and are connected. This one is focused primarily on economic mobility. So they just have different ways and different targets of what they're trying to help people with.
Okay. Well, I want to thank our guests and Sean, Marlene, especially. If there's anything more you want the community to know about contacting, getting involved, or learning more?
We also just get to our website and we'll be able to connect you to the program, www.cfcrochester.org.
Absolutely. That or works. 325-5116, mm-hmm. extension 3418.
Francie, what's next for you?
I don't know. She said she willing to have mentors and stuff. So if y'all want to take me on, I mean, girl, you know I'll vouch for y'all.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the best thing I can do in the moment until I can go to school and then start my cosmetology thing. But
you very genuinely strike me as sort of a positive force of energy.
Yes.
And I know you've mentioned that you've dealt with depression in the past. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, we've now known each other for an hour. Everybody mm-hmm. goes through different times. But I sincerely hope that energy continues for you and that there's good things coming for you. It's really been an honor to get to know you. Thanks for being
here. Thank you.
Francie Gonzalez, who is a participant in the Bridges to Success program, and Leslie Mossman, a mentor. Nice to get to meet you and know you as well. Thank you for being here. And now you've learned a lot about what's going on. Sean Futch, who is the Bridges to Success program director. Thank you. Marlene Bissett, CEO and president of Catholic Family Center. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
A lot more coming up on Connections, member-supported public radio, the last day of our winter membership campaign. Please join the family of members at WXXI and NPR 454-6300, and we'll talk to you in the next hour on Connections.